The profit platform basically states that every pillar in the business, it's not an individual thing. It's a, it, and I'll use another metaphor, it's a pie. So you can't have a great sales engine, but a poor organization or bad process, because you will lose profitability. You can't have a great organization and great process, but not have a business development engine or no measurement, because you will lose profitability. The ingredients of making a great apple pie means you need to use all of the ingredients. So conceptually, the profit platform essentially sets, and if you look at the Venn diagram, you'll notice that the arrows flow back and forth within each individual box, not a circle, as if the process starts with one, then you go to two, then you go to three, then you go to four. And all of the pillars contribute or detract from profitability.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi there, innovator. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I trust you also enjoyed our most recent interviews with Deb Farnworth-Wood, the founder of Australian Skin Clinics, and Peter Cook of The Thought Leaders. Today, I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Rob Brayman. Rob's from Cogent Analytics, which is a business management consulting firm that partners with clients to identify areas of opportunity in the financial, operational, and organizational aspects of their business that will accelerate their leadership goals. Now, Cogent's primary focus is to help small to medium-sized privately held businesses and partner with them to achieve success and long-term profitability. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where you'll find a host of free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. You can access the Transformational Marketing Hub by visiting innovabiz.co/VIP. Go check it out. It's free to join. And of course, if you're a member already, just log in to get your resources. In our discussion today, Rob talked to me about the science of business development and also the importance of developing and retaining your people. He told me how to engineer higher profit without raising prices. And he also described why business is like a great apple pie. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Rob Brayman. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today, all the way from Greensboro, North Carolina in the USA, Rob Brayman, who's the managing member and founder of Cogent Analytics. Welcome to the podcast, Rob. It's a real privilege to have you here as my guest.
Jürgen, fantastic opportunity, and thank you for having me.
Josh Elledge, who was our guest on episode 158 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we interview you, Rob. So a big hello to Josh.
He is a fantastic individual, and he definitely knows his influence growth arena about as well as anybody I've met, and find him to be a wealth of knowledge in all respects. So I will take that recommendation highly.
And he was a great guest on the podcast and certainly added value to our audience. Now, Cogent Analytics is a business management consulting firm that helps small to medium-sized businesses by helping them grow and get to the next level. So I'm really excited to talk about some of the things related to business growth and succeeding in business and the things you've learned from your work at Cogent. But before we get to that, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get to where you are today, and what were some of the pivotal moments on that journey?
So Jürgen, I always tell people I'm a bit of a mutt. In that I had a very eclectic youth. I lived in foreign countries. I graduated high school. I think I lived 9 places by the time I had graduated high school. Ended up going into the military. I had the privilege of serving in the military with 1st Battalion, 5th Special Forces Group with an amazing group of operators. I would tell you that my military experience created the foundation for then becoming an entrepreneur. I was an entrepreneur by the age of 28 years old. I had my first minority interest share in equity. I built 3 companies with the same partner. By the time we sold one company, we were 50-50 equity participation, and I was still a pretty young guy at that point in time. I then liquidated to him. I moved my family to North Carolina and became a business analyst. I answered an ad. I was about to open my 4th company at that point in time, and I answered an ad that said, essentially, are you interested in working with small business owners? And because I'm a serial entrepreneur and it lended itself to my passion, I took the opportunity and then over the next 11 years of my life represented small business owners at a very personal level. And whether it's a father, a son, a mother, a sister, brother, cousin, disassociated partners, entrepreneurship is the lifeblood of economic growth, whether it's here in America or where you are in Australia or many countries around the world. That individual spirit of a small business owner being able to say, I will or I can, and opening the doors for the first time, it profoundly shaped my thinking, my career. When I left that organization, there was a divergence in value system. I don't think what we do in consulting should be about the billed hour. I think it should be about client success. I was very successful under their roof, but I elected to separate from them in 2013 and really build Cogent Analytics based on my vision, which starts with client first mentality in all aspects. And also that's how I have built the company with respect to life cycle. So long, durable relationships with clients is what I think is the disruptor for my particular industry.
Mm. Yeah, and it's a little sad actually that is a disruptor, or that is considered innovation, because to me, that is a very core part of my value system. And I thought you've got to be adding value to somebody. So in terms of your work with clients, what changes for the client when somebody works with you and with Cogent Analytics?
We go through a comprehensive, a very holistic view of a client in the process of our discovery. And what I did when the discovery is, depending on the size and nature of the discovery, it's typically between 2 and 5 days. And it is a comprehensive review based, again, on size and scope of the relationship. But we look at what we've developed called the Cogent Analytics Profit Platform. And it distills down very complex business principles into 4 fundamental pillars: business development, organizational engineering, process engineering or production side of the pillar, and then KPI development, measurement, whether financial or operational. So those, doing all 4 of those pillars well or poorly is what defines long-term profit and or cash position or equity position in a company. So our discovery, the idea is to engage with a client not for the intention of representing long-term in consulting, although it happens every week. We go in from the premise that says the discovery unto itself is a deliverable and is valuable to our clients, because most often small business owners spend a lot of time from within their forest living in it. And we try to pull them above the trees. And all of my analysts are of the president level acumen. So they've all had prior experience both in entrepreneurship or working for other people as senior executives. And having another president look at the business in a holistic way to be able to pull our clients above the forest and be able to get them to take ownership of what is working well, but more importantly, areas of opportunity that are usually readily recognizable, although sometimes it takes a deeper dive in analytics to understand what the trend analysis is telling us. Sorry for the geek out session. our ultimate goal is to be able to give a client a deliverable that it gives them that view of their business from above the forest. Hopefully you appreciate the metaphor.
Yeah, yeah. And in doing so, I'm guessing that that highlights some areas where some further attention might be warranted to improve their performance.
Whether us doing the representation long-term or them, the ultimate goal is to improve profitability, organizational structure, process, or operations, and how do you get accountability within the organization so that you can organically grow a company with good human resources striving for a common mission. So that's always been my vision as an entrepreneur, that in a well-run organization, you have people not just following the mission or leadership of the owner, but contributing to the mission and or leadership of the owner. So there's got to be a vested interest from the organization to be both inspired by what they do every day and want to take gainful participation to enhance the organization itself.
Hmm. Now, you've achieved quite rapid growth within Cogent over the time you've been in business, and I'm guessing that you used these systems on your own business to grow. But what were some of the big challenges that you had with rapid growth like that?
I think I'll answer that by giving you a little history. We started with six founding members, and in that six people today, that was April 22nd of 2014 was what we consider to be our launch date. Today, we are currently near 140 employees. So as you can imagine by that story I just told, that organizational engineering has been an issue for us each and every month of each and every quarter of each and every year that we've been in existence. We did the Inc. 500, I think our third year in business. Then we were in 5,000, which is a growth metric only, by the way. It's a percentage of growth. Mm-hmm. So, and then last year, I want to be very careful on how to say this. I believe we will also be honored to participate in the Inc. 5,000 for our third year in a row based on growth and math that I can see. Obviously, that has not been awarded and will not be awarded until August of this year. But I believe based on where our numbers are and what we finish the year at, we will also be honored with that. So that's a longer answer to a shorter question, which is, I think people have been our greatest challenge. We have built an entire team of directors within the firm now. We have multiple strategic partners that support our clients. And we have middle-level management who has been organically grown from within the organization. I think we do that as a very proactive behavior, and I would recommend to any of your listeners, if you're having hypergrowth like we have experienced, the organizational piece must be addressed on a month-by-month, quarter-by-quarter basis, because most often you will start the company with the people you have, not necessarily the people you need, and those are usually a key area that we uncover when we do a discovery with a client, where areas of that organization have either not been treated with the appropriate recourse or have been let slide in areas that are impinging on both growth, communication, intermediate and low-level growth and training within an organization. It is so critical that you are consistently reviewing who you are as an organization and what kind of culture you're developing within that organization to be able to achieve hyper growth standards.
Hmm. Yeah, well, the profit platform you outlined earlier for us, it certainly is a kind of a holistic view. And one of the aspects of that is the people area, which you've labeled organizational engineering, which I find fascinating because I guess from a scientific background, that suggests that you can build the structure, the culture, the talent that is appropriate for the business and that you should be doing that, which I think a lot of people forget that and hire very short term for maybe for talent or something. And then they forget about cultural fit. They forget about the communications that you talked about. So how do you go about, let's start with the cultural thing first, or the culture thing, how, from your experience, how should a business go about setting the right culture and making sure they can maintain that culture?
So it goes to the leader itself. And if I can kind of turn that on its head a little bit, every organization has got to establish what it believes, how it's going to go to market, how do we want our customers to view us. Now, I will give you the three-legged stool. Number one, there has to be a very clear mission coming from leadership, and there's got to be it's got to be concise, it's got to be directed, and it's got to have full participation from ownership and senior leadership. That's where the beginnings of the culture start. If that's weak, it's going to prove itself out down to the last and lowest level in your organization. The second leg of the stool is hiring people, not for expediency, but truly evaluating people both for form, fit, and function, but also making sure that cultural fit is a key indicator in your hiring selection. And then lastly, part of that stool is retention, which goes to training, compensation, and communication. And those three things are critical when you bring people into your organization. You want to be able to retain them through a competitive compensation strategy that allows them to take ownership of their own sphere of influence or what they're expected to do. And I want to speak a little deeper than just a job description. A performance-based job description not only defines what is expected, but more importantly, how it's measured and then how that person would be compensated based on performance. So we do that quite a bit with our clients. When we look at that cultural review, we get a lot of feedback from the employees that work within an organization. That tells us much both about leadership, hiring practice, and retention practices internally. So that's why we call it organizational engineering. You have to take a critical thought position towards how you're going to build effectively, because if you only have three or four players on the field trying to score a point, likely you're going to lose a lot of games.
Yeah. That's a good metaphor. I'm reminded when you're talking about the retention part, which is really important, and I think a lot of businesses fall down at that area. That's certainly been my experience in the corporate arena and also some of the companies that I work with. But I'm reminded of Tom O'Toole from the Beechworth Bakery, or the founder of the Beechworth Bakery here. He's a character, but he has this presentation and he talks a lot about training your people as one of the principles that he grew his business on. And he tells this story about somebody that said to him, but Tom, what if you train them and they leave? And his response to that is, what if you don't train them and they stay?
That's a great response.
Yeah.
I have always believed that if you're afraid of training somebody, if your fear of loss, after you train somebody, there's a whole lot of other things going on in that organization to inspire them to leave.
Yeah.
Most attrition is created by ownership and leadership. You know, you're going to have some built-in attrition, as is natural to any organization. I think attrition to an expected level is appropriate. It's when you have unintended attrition, you have to look a little deeper as to cultural issues, leadership issues, management issues, because people want to be, you know, esteem value is usually what drives employee behavior far more than compensation. Although it's a critical piece of retention, I always say esteem values drive employee behavior far more than money.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're right. And I think certainly in the corporate world, I was often puzzled that some of the big corporations that I worked for or I knew other people worked for seemed to have just money as the driver for compensating their people or trying to retain their people, and they seem to miss all those other aspects that motivate people to come to work and inspire them to contribute.
In today's world where information is so readily available, I mean, you can pick up your iPhone, you can pick up your tablet, people are exposed to more information than they ever have before. And I would tell you that the average employee in today's world wants to have a voice. And I'll give you an anecdotal. People always talk to me about millennials almost as if it's a four-letter word.
I was just about to go there. I hear that a lot.
Crazy. Yeah, millennials, and I said to a client 2 weeks ago, I said, you need to quit talking about it like it's a four-letter word. Millennials are great. They have no different, you know, our parents used to call us, generationally, they called us, depending on what you're part of, the X generation, the Y generation, or, but our parents looked at us the same way most people talk about millennials today. I would say that they have a shared value system. They still want to build a career. They still want to be able to advance in that career. They want to be able to take care of their family. They want to be able to have university for their children. They want to be able to provide a home and be able to provide security for their spouse and themselves. Those same things drive people in an age group called millennial, no different than drove us when we were younger. Now, they may communicate differently. They may be looking for different reward structure. I would argue that it is the leadership and ownership of a business that needs to appreciate that energy in youth, because it will make the organization sustainable for the long term. So I'm a diehard believer that we need to quit talking about millennials like they're a four-letter word.
Yeah.
And appreciate that that perspective is healthy for our organization, that youth and energy is healthy for an organization.
Yeah, exactly. I absolutely agree with you. And I think one of the things that, you know, in lots of the discussions I had, and you mentioned earlier about the ease of accessing information today, and that's changed quite a bit from the time when I was younger, certainly. I mean, we went to a library and we borrowed books and we read newspapers. Today, you don't need to, you know, that barrier is not there. You just pick up the phone and jump on Google and you can find anything you need to find out. The challenge, of course, is, you know, how good is the information, because there's so much out there. But I think that has contributed to millennials, the people growing up with that technology available to them, have all that information at their fingertips. And so they're contributions are different, and I think they're looking to contribute a lot more, perhaps because they're challenging the established structures. Whereas when I was growing up, it wasn't necessarily the done thing to challenge the established structure and say, I've got a great idea, we could do this different. Whereas today, I think the younger generations do much more of that, and I think that's a good thing.
So I have an interesting statistic for you. There was a study, and I'm trying to remember the college so I can refer your listeners to it, but there was a study about how people discern information by age group. And if you are a 35 and under, you have an 87% opportunity to discern the difference between fact and fiction, because it's how they search. The older you get, 35 to 50, that drops to 61%. And from that next age group up to older, we'll say, there it drops precipitously to about 30%. So I find it interesting that the older and wiser we get as a culture, the less likely the older we get we are to discern in today's information environment that we live, the less ability we have to discern between fact and fiction, which I think is because the millennials and under grew up with the technology so that they know there is valid and invalid information available to them. They search differently than we do. They seek out information differently than we do. So as leaders, we need to be aware that when a person is actively engaged in our organization, they see our vision, they see where the company's going, and they want to take an active or gainful position in the company and be able to proffer ideas, that those ideas aren't quashed or squashed, for lack of better words, because of that cultural structure. The more you can engender people within that organization, the higher performing the organization will be. And youth brings vigor, as we all know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things I hear quite often is that, and I'll use the term millennials, that they don't have the loyalty of earlier generations. They're job hopping, and it's hard to get them engaged. So, what are your comments on that? I mean, I've got an opinion, obviously, but.
So it goes to what we just said. I think that because they process information, they have different aspirations. They have a different approach to the way they go into our career. And I'll just talk about Cogent Analytics because I think that's a fair anecdotal. 35% of our staff, to pick an easy number, are 35 to 25. And I've got an amazing group of young professionals that are interns that have joined the organization and grown their career from within the organization. And I would tell you that our millennial or Gen, I guess it would be Gen Z now, are some of the highest performing people in the company. And I don't wake up in the morning fearful that they're going to job hop, because I've made their voice important. I've made their voice part of our overall mission. And if anything, I've got younger people drawing other younger people into the organization because they see themselves here for an extended period of time. Their aspiration is not to job hop. Their aspiration is to participate.
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, if it's a fundamental principle of human behavior, or a core human need, if you like. If people feel as though they belong in this organization and they're happy here and they're fulfilled, well, you know, they're probably going to stay regardless of what their age group is or anything else.
I believe that what the problem is as far as millennials go, and we should divert from this topic, but
yeah,
the grouping of employees within a given age group, I think generationally speaking, is not much different than we were viewed by our parents, just to be a little redundant on that point.
Yeah.
What we need to do as leaders, especially as we grow our organization, is looking for those high performers. And how do we capitalize on that energy in that performance? How do we test those skills and wherewithal, either in critical thinking, participation, management, or you know, esprit de corps, for lack of a better word, within the organization that we're building? That is more about us as leaders than it is about them as employees. You're always going to have attrition. If I can go back and touch on a point for earlier, if you have zero attrition in your company, it historically means you also have zero accountability in your company. It would be impossible to believe that you could hire 100% right 100% of the time. That would be, as I tell my clients, us convincing ourselves of our own grandeur. The key, obviously, is to be honest with ourselves first and realize that if the pain is, if I have to hire somebody again, I hire them, I train them, I get them in the position, then I don't like what they're doing and I got to start over again. My argument would be is absolutely, because it's not about, the question is, does it take you a year to make that happen, or are you able to discern the aptitude, ability, esprit de corps of that individual within 90 to 180 days so that you're not losing or having a negative impact on other members of the team, on profitability, on customer perspective of who we are based on a non-performing employee creating damage to our brand. You know, hiring, recruiting, organizational engineering is also, again, retention and training. You have to have accountability in an organization to turn that non-performing asset, because culturally, everybody in the organization then knows that we're aspiring for excellence, and you get to retain higher performing people because they know that's the expectation and culture of the organization. Hopefully, if you want me to go through that again, I will. Hopefully that is a pretty clear illustration of my belief structure.
No, that all makes total sense. And also, even if you do hire really well, people change at some point. They might reach the limit of their ambition at a particular organization. And if you're the leader of that organization, it's actually in everybody's interest to help them move on, so that if you've trained them up to a point where they can take on more responsibility and that more responsibility isn't available within your organization, then that's, to me, that's a good place to be. And then you do have attrition there, and there's an opportunity to refresh.
And have upward mobility.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about one of the other four pillars, if you like, of your platform, and the sales or the business development part of it. I saw you talk or heard you talk somewhere about engineering higher profit without raising prices, and that kind of piqued my interest. So how do you achieve that?
Okay, so, and I know everybody's going to key in on this business development piece, but I'm going to do a little geek out and go back to financial management.
Mm-hmm.
So the theory of break even, most people go out and build budgets that are essentially flatline budgets. And if you really do a budget correctly, it should be based on the cycle rate of the business. So a break even is established in a company at a point in which you've absorbed 100% of your direct cost and 100% of your overhead or SG&A. And I can give two values of this. Either it's 50% of your semi-variable or semi-direct. What that creates for you is an opportunity to bid at the same price to a volume that is above break even. Now, the conceptually, and this is easier to do on a whiteboard, Jürgen, but I'm hoping I can do it with my words. Conceptually, what it says is if you are driving sales at a price, you reach a point in volume in which you have absorbed 100% of your selling general administrative expenditures. At that point, when you have absorbed 100%, it functionally goes away. So if my overhead in a $100,000 a month company is $10,000, once I achieve that $100,000 in that month, I no longer have, it's not like I'm going to pay for $11,000 or $12,000 or $13,000. It is a fixed cost at that $10,000. So the next dollar of revenue is not having to absorb your fixed cost. Now, there's an easy way to describe that, which basically says if my overhead is 10% of that $100,000, if I do $200,000, it then becomes 5%. Does it make sense when I oversimplify it in that way?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, so I wanted to cover both sides of both theory and, you know, just straightforward. Yeah. If I'm growing revenue, I'm not growing additional fixed costs. My fixed should be fixed. And it should be delineated in your financial management, your strategic planning, and the budget that you lay out for your business. So if I'm not increasing my price, then the effort goes into sales and sales control, which gets down into the science of business development. And I will, you know, give you some ideas on that. That is, how do I manage my people to number of touches? How do those touches progress or escalate? How do I get from escalation to close? And at what percentage is that incurring per individual in the role of sales? So if I have 10 sales reps, I'm going to have high performers and low performers and then an arc in between. But I should be able to manage my overall output of sales through managing the behavior that is occurring within my sales organization every day. And I'll just as an example, number of doors, number of touches, number of requests for quote to close rate. Each one of those are measurable within an organization, within a sales team, as a high level metric of performance. We can get into gross margin management and some sundry of other things, but just conceptually, you should be able to increase sales at the same price if you are managing both what your point is break even and how you are managing the sales team. Now, let me give you a little strategic element of break even for your listeners. interesting that when you go in our previous example of a $100,000 a month company that went to $200,000 a month, we didn't create additional overhead. If my overhead value is 10% at $100,000 a month, if I go to $200,000, then my overhead become 5%. Now, if I have an engineered profit of 10% as a minimum mandatory standard, once I'm above my break-even point and my overhead rate by percentage is going down, I can choose that additional 5% to fall to the bottom line, or I can use it for competitive market acquiring. So if I have 5 additional percentage of margin, and you'll probably want to ask me some questions on this, but if I have 5 additional percentage points of margin that I can either go to the bottom line and be 15% net profit or increase my throughput on sales by taking a discount of 1-3%, the key is you never want to give away or do it haphazardly more than what your engineered profit standard would be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
You can ask me a bunch of questions. I know we did it quickly.
Yeah. I guess I'm a little curious as to, so the key thing is the measurement part, and I know that's another pillar of the platform, and looking at the whole sales process from the point of view of each element and optimizing each element. Is that the process?
So the profit platform basically states that every pillar in the business, it's not an individual thing, I'll use another metaphor, it's a pie. So you can't have a great sales engine, but a poor organization or bad process, because you will lose profitability. You can't have a great organization and great process, but not have a business development as engine or no measurement, because you will lose profitability. The ingredients of making a great apple pie means you need to use all of the ingredients. So conceptually, the profit platform essentially says, and if you look at the Venn diagram, you'll notice that the arrows flow back and forth within each individual box, not a circle, as if the process starts with 1, then you go to 2, then you go to 3, then you go to 4. And all of the pillars contribute or detract from profitability. So when we're having this conversation, and I'll give you an example, a business development strategy without a good team, without a good process, or without measurement of accountability will fail miserably. Does it make sense when I say it to you that way?
Yeah, definitely.
So I don't want listeners to think of the profit platform as I've just got to work on one individual pillar. When I look at a company as an analyst or now a senior partner in this firm, I look at that company for all areas of the business and how do those areas interconnect? How do they intermesh or interweave to create better functionality, better organizational control, better overall revenue performance? And how do we predetermine net profitability, and how do we create accountability through measurement to achieve those goals? So it's true efficiency within the four pillars.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And also, I like the way it's integrated and kind of all part of the same apple pie, as you put it. What I'm curious about is what are some of the measurement systems or the control systems, KPI type systems that you look at to kind of get a snapshot of what's happening in each of these areas and the health of the business?
So although every business is unique, I think every one of your listeners would find that there are about 70% of KPIs are consistent regardless of business size, industry, or nature. The other 30% we custom design to the specific company that we're representing. But if you think about the 70%, which is the question I think you're asking me, financial performance, AR, AP, cash flow, margin, both gross and net, human resource utilization, utilization and efficiency, excuse me. And you can think about return on labor dollars. You can turn return on fixed assets. You know that you're buying the appropriate equipment or appropriate assets and what return on those assets are. So there's a number of KPIs that govern the overall health and welfare, either on the profit and loss statement or the balance sheet, that are leading indicators that every business owner has to have good control over. And our clients, Jürgen, if I think of small business, and I will define that for today's call, our clients are, for the most part, between 3 and 30 million. We have another division of our firm that represents clients much smaller than that. And we have a substantive number of clients in the 50 to 500 million range. But I think when I talk about privately held companies or privately held equity, the lion's share being in that 3 to 30 million box. And those companies, by and large, started with a technician who decided to run a business more than a business person who wanted to learn a skill or a trade.
Hmm.
So being that their passion is about doing what they love, the nature of business means that most often a company, whether they grow their company to 10 million or 15 million or 20 million, what will happen is that somewhere along the line, the business owner gets drug into managing the business of the business instead of just the business running them. And now we're getting into financial performance. We're getting into metrics of performance. We're getting into key performance indicators at every level of the organization. And that's what happens in what I'll call privately held equity, is that businesses grow because you build a great reputation. You know, you run an honorable business, you build a good team. But every single week of every single month of every single year, we run into companies that are underperforming most often by between 3 and 5%. And that's a well-run company. And I will give you an example of this week. We have, and I'll just say, I'll pick 10. We have 10 very specific clients that we are working through the nature of profit enhancement with. And that ranges from a low of a company that was losing as much as net 10% profit to a company that should be making 10% and was making 4%. Now, great company, great families, great husband and wife team. And I'll just give you an anecdotal. In that husband and wife team, the son and daughter joined the business. They both had critical roles in the company. They are the successors to mom and dad. This company is 25 years old and historically made somewhere between 6% and 7% net profit. Their accountant said that they were doing great. Our argument is, if by industry standard that company should be making between 12 and 15% profitability, our obligation to that client is to show them the areas that they left that 7 to 8%, because you can imagine that has a profound impact on that family.
Mm.
7 to 8% profitability in an organization of that size is a substantial sum of money. Now you're talking about long-term security for the company, for the family, retirement for mom and dad, potential educational programs for the kids and their children or grandbabies. So that's what I look at when I take on a client, is how does it not just impact the business, but what is the impact of the business having on the life of the client? Which, if any of your listeners are entrepreneurs, I'm sure they would share with you that most often the challenges that a business owner goes through is not quite as sexy as the rest of the world thinks we go through.
Yeah, that's right.
Being a business owner doesn't mean we get to work for ourselves. We're typically working for the bank. We're working to pay taxes. We're working for our employees. And somewhere along the line, we get the joy of business ownership.
Hmm. That's right. And it brings with it a responsibility as well. And there's lots of risks that people take. So I love that you kind of connect it all together with, you know, what does it actually mean to the people in the business? And I think, you know, everybody that goes into business for themselves is driven by some level of motivation in addition to, you know, their passion for what they're doing in the business. And I think that's really admirable that you do that. Well, I find
that is the biggest motivator for a privately held company is not, I mean, don't get me wrong. Business owners take great passion for wanting to build a good organization. They care about their employees. They care about how their companies are run. I mean, is it an honorable organization? Usually the motivators are what's happening outside or how the business as a wealth creation vehicle is having an impact both positively and negatively on every element of their life. And I think you can get the control back. I don't think that if you're living in an organization that is painful, that you should just accept the pain. I think that, you know, I have clients that go to work each and every day, you know, fighting the fight, and it's not supposed to be that hard. Usually if it's that painful, it means there's a lot of other things that are going on in that company that's creating that pain. Hence the profit platform. I do want to make a point, by the way, if anybody goes to our website and they look at the profit platform, the one illustration that didn't quite fit without making it the illustration overly small is the circle that goes around the profit platform called strategic planning. When I first drew that on a whiteboard some 15, 16 years ago, I did it with a great strategic planning element to it because I think the strategic planning and knowing where you're going, knowing the roadmap, having a compass or a GPS really defines how you're going to perform in those other four pillars and how at the end of the day you contribute or detract from profitability. Sorry, I wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, I think that's an important point that the kind of strategic plan sits above that. Well, I could certainly dig into this a whole lot more and keep talking, but I'm aware of the time. So I think it's a good point to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round designed to help the listener who's primarily an innovator and leader in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions and hopefully you'll give us some insightful answers and inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today. So
excellent. Fire away.
What's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Innovation means you have to step back from the fray. I think I always tell people my greatest thoughts are either on an elliptical or in the shower. It's when I can shut off the din that's going on around me and genuinely focus on doing what I find to be innovative or coming up with a different direction or solving problems. So I think you have to take time away from the din to be able to focus on what makes you better. Regardless of what that better is defined by you, you have to pay yourself back as a leader and you have to step back from the fray.
Yeah, that's great advice. So when you say elliptical, that's an elliptical trainer.
It is. I put on my music and I just, you know, everybody has a distraction.
Well, I'm a keen bike rider, and often when I'm, particularly if I'm riding alone and not having a social chit chat at the same time, I get lots of ideas then.
Best time when the juices are flowing.
Yeah. So what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
I will tell you that the thing that I am working on right now, and I probably shouldn't go in too depth with this, but I have developed, I like to invent things on the side, so I developed a grip for a gaming controller for the Xbox and the PlayStation that I just picked up and started working with some plasticine and designed this darn thing. And everybody that has looked at it tells me that it's amazing, and I say that with italics, but I do that for fun, right? I like to come up with new ideas that disrupt a little bit. Sorry, I know that wasn't about Cogent Analytics, but you asked me what was the most innovative thing I've done recently.
That's great. Yeah. So how did you come how did you come to do that? Was it just sort of a whim, or did you see a need there that was unsatisfied for you?
So I when I was in the military, I jumped out of airplanes and I snapped my pinky finger laterally on a night jump. And I lived with this darn thing for 30 years. And I used to be able to take my finger and bend it backwards and rotate it around to the side. So I finally had it surgically repaired. And once it was frozen in place, I couldn't grip things quite the way I had gripped things otherwise. So it was a function of coming up with something that I could grip that was attached to a surgically repaired finger. So that's what spurned on the innovation.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Is there a resource that you use most often? Something that's a favorite?
So, I want this to be valuable to the listeners. So I will say that, you know, in technology today, there are a number of ERP systems that are both industry specific and allow you data analytics better than it's ever been in our history. Now, you do have to go in and define what analytics you want to see, but for me, if I go back to the most innovative thing, one of the things that we've done on behalf of our clients is how Cogent Analytics was named, is doing micro and macro analytics. So if you don't have an ERP system or some system that allows you to control each of the four pillars of business, I highly recommend being able to look at that investment. Please don't go too expensive. You don't need the highest priced value on the shelf. And before you implement the ERP, make sure you're not convinced by the ERP seller that they're going to come in and do all this magic. You have to do the due diligence before you make the decision. And then prior to purchasing, you must define your processes in a finite way before you start, or you will end up with an ERP system that dictates to you your processes as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah.
So I will say that is probably a high recommendation.
Yeah, that's great advice. I've been through an experience like that where in a fairly large corporation, the ERP system that was brought on board dictated the way we did our work, essentially. And in an organization that had a culture of service to the customer, all of a sudden that became very difficult. And I remember trying to remind people all the time, you know, this system's supposed to help us do our jobs, not dictate how we do our jobs.
100% true.
Yeah.
So analytics, I guess, is the key part I want people to hear out of this discussion. It doesn't much matter to me which ERP you choose. It matters to me that you go into it and do the precursor work before you implement it to make sure that, and let me put this in context. The ERP will not fix your problems because people are still attached to their problems. It will give you better information if you ask it. It will, if you define what information you want and everybody understands how it's going to be used, it does not negate a leader's responsibility to drive performance and ability within the organization itself. And I will go off on a long tangent about organization. Which ERP you select, it really matters how you define information, what analytics you need to be able to create the support or KPI structures, obviously for organizational and process control. I think that's a pretty fulsome answer. I apologize. We had a little break in there.
Yeah, that's fine. So what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
So for other coaching, you know, for us, and I will tell you what we manage every day, you have to manage the detail and you have to genuinely be interested in where your client is at. I find that a lot of consultants, a lot of coaching groups speak at instead of with the client, and typically they will give great work and walk away from a client who has no understanding, which really is the key, is how do you embed and make durable what you're teaching? And please don't assume that because a client is, you know, nodding their head in assention or agreement that they actually have it. Most often, and that's part of the reason why our lifecycle program exists, is because we know that a client will digress to bad behavior. And we do a considerable amount of work post-project in follow-up on each one of the areas or pillars that we work on to ensure that the client truly understands and is actively participating in their own best interest. So I think that's the best way to put it, Jürgen.
Yeah, yeah. And I love that. Love your point about being with the customer, acting in as a partner and making sure that you help them implement what you recommend. All right. What's the number one thing you think anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Well, that means a lot of things. If you're truly going to separate yourself from the crowd, it means a lot of things. Be an innovator, be a disruptor, care enough to know what your competitor's doing and doing it better and doing it intentionally, but most often do it honorably, because that is the greatest challenge.
Great. Thanks, Rob. Well, thank you. This has been really great. Now, where can people reach out and learn more about Cogent Analytics and about you and your organization, and even say thank you for what you've shared with us today?
Please, www.cogentanalytics.com. You can call the office. We are in Greensboro, North Carolina, but we do business currently in 22 states. That is soon to be, I believe, 27 states by the end of the year. So www.cogentanalytics.com. The phone number is 336-665-8154. Please feel free to ask for me personally. Really, please, if you're going to discern the difference between our two product offerings, the discovery itself and then the consulting services, we historically do not do consulting without having a fulsome understanding of where a particular client is at. I think the deliverable in the discovery is powerful enough and is a standalone. So reach out. Please make personal contact. We genuinely have the small business or small to mid-sized business interest in mind.
Great. Thanks, Rob. I'll post the links to that website in the show notes and people can go check out. There's lots of information there on your website about what you do and about the discovery process and how that works. So you know, I encourage people to go take a look at that, because I think there's a lot that you can learn just by looking at what you've shared on the website there. So what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in innovation and in their field?
You have to, and you're going to think this is a crazy answer, but you have to choose to be a disruptor. If you're just doing the same thing that everybody is doing, if you become a me too product, the only thing that differentiates you between the next guy is price. And, you know, the real character of the organization doesn't come through until you earn the business. And that's where the value and honor and integrity, that all comes through. That's how you build your brand, is once you have the business. I tell all my clients, you have to choose to be a disruptor. You can't be a me too product.
Yeah, that's great advice. And as you say, if you do fall into that trap of the me too, then it ultimately comes down to price. Finally then, who would you like me to interview on a future InnovaBuzz podcast, and why?
I think I would like to take some time to think about that. I have a number of clients that I think you would do great with.
Yeah.
And they are true innovators in their particular industries. And I would be excited to make that introduction. But I would want to step back a little bit and give you a couple or three names that you can choose from. Obviously, I don't know whether they'll participate, but if you don't mind, I'd like to reserve that until after we get a chance to talk about it a little more.
Wonderful. Well, I'll follow up with you on that, and we'll see if we can get some additional guests on the podcast that can contribute to this conversation on innovation.
I would love to.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us on the InnovaBuzz podcast today. It's been very generous of you to share the information so openly, and I've really enjoyed this and learned quite a bit as well. So I wish you the best for the future and for the future of Cogent Analytics, and let's keep in touch.
Jürgen, truly a pleasure, and thank you. Hopefully this is good for your audience, and we were able to to reach out and maybe make an impact with one or two souls out there today.
I'm sure we did. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
I hope you enjoyed that truly insightful conversation with Rob and took something with you from what he shared. My highlights were Rob's focus on the science and analytics of the business and how focusing on the big picture and at the same time monitoring the details in a way that you can gain insights into business performance as a leading indicator so that you can take appropriate action to grow the business, grow the profits, and grow your people. I'd love to know what you took away from Rob's interview. Leave a comment below the blog post, which can be found at innovabiz.co/Rob Braiman. That is RobBraiman. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Rob Braiman. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Rob there, as well as links to the Cogent Analytics website and to the discovery process that we talked about in the interview. Rob suggested we interview Sunny Hahn of Atlas Solutions on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So Sunny, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Rob Braiman. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/VIP to access the Transformational Marketing Hub and all its free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. Also, go check out our Tales of Marketing Transformation show at talesofmarketingtransformation.com, all one word, where each episode will provide one valuable message to guide you on your journey of marketing transformation. And, of course, tune in again next week to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got more fantastic guests lined up, including Alicia and James Crook of Massage Champions, a double header on that one, and Andres Purdy of OutFunnel. Stay connected. Subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast so you'll make sure you'll never miss another episode. Head on over to innovabiz.co/subscribe. We'd also love you to leave us a review because what you think matters to us. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, or questions, then share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic Facebook community at the Tales of Marketing Transformation Facebook group. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMA. It's free to join. I hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.